Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 27. And Dave, it's a beautiful fall day in western Pennsylvania. We're back to seasonal temperatures overnight in the high 40s last night. And we were going to see 70s to 75 over the next week. How's Vegas, my friend?
Boy, you want to talk about some Chamber of Commerce days out here right now. You know, 88, 89, 90 during the day, about 15 to 20% humidity and 5 miles an hour wind. And then in the evening time, gets down to about 69, 70, right around there. Right at it gets to the low right when I'm waking up, about 3:30. So I can actually enjoy it. But yeah, great, great weather out here right now. Starting to feel football weather like, and another great weekend. Boy, these last few, especially when it comes to college football, man, and the NFL last week, real competitive. Some obviously some upsets or some things people didn't see coming.
Great, and I mean, aside from we've talked all about the other stuff, but on the field last week, NFL was fantastic. I mean, if you're a Steeler fan, it would have been nice to see the Patriots lose that game. And probably, maybe even if you're still, I don't know if you, nobody was rooting for the Bengals, but I wouldn't have mind seeing the Packers and the Patriots both lose those games. But man, there were some great, great results last week.
Yeah, and college football as well, too. What about the end of that Penn State-Iowa game? I mean, it just really was a great weekend. Will be hard to top, but some great games on the docket, both college and pro this week as well.
And Mel Kiper put out his big board yesterday for college football fans in the area who are Penn State fans. Saquon Barkley, number two on his list behind Sam Darnold in front of Josh Rosen. And if you've been following some of the commentary over the past week, Saquon Barkley had the most yards, all-purpose yards, of a Penn State back in history. I think he had 389 or around that number against Iowa. A lot of people calling him maybe the best back of the generation, the best back they've seen in the last 20 years. I don't know. I'd like to see, look, Penn State is to take nothing away from Saquon Barkley. He is a great player, and I think he'll be a great pro. Dave, think about Penn State backs who've gone in the top five picks. You had Kejana Carter. You had Curtis Enos. You had, I'm going to forget like half of these. But they've had so many first-round guys. And, you know, Jack Ham, who does the games, amongst others, has said – he's the best he's seen. I mean, Larry Johnson went to Penn State. You go back to Capoletti and Mitchell and Franco Harris back in the old days. But I'm forgetting one or two. DJ Dozier, I think, went to Penn State. I'm forgetting one or two guys more recently who were top five.
Didn't John Capoletti?
Yeah, I said Capoletti, Mitchell, and Harris. Yeah, Lydell, Mitchell, and Harris. Capoletti won the Heisman back in, 71, 72.
What about Blair Thomas?
Blair Thomas, right. That's another guy. I think he went second or third overall. So pretty. So anyway, but the last point being, so Penn State's only they've played so far. They've played Akron, Georgia State, Pitt, and Iowa. Let's see if he puts up the big numbers, because if he does, he might be the front runner for the Heisman.
But that kid's fun to watch, isn't he? I mean, you want to talk about someone with balance and a nice burst and all. He's it. I know.
Can catch the ball. Can catch it out of the backfield.
Yeah, I know Steeler fans. I know there's a couple of players that Steeler fans already, licking their lips. Darnold out in USC and Barkley. Here's to hoping we don't get a good shot at those guys this year, but most definitely those guys are fun to watch for sure. And Barkley, he has to be a front runner right now for the Heisman.
Yeah. So okay. So let's get into this. And look, we've obviously covered the anthem situation. There's not a lot of new news. We'll Dave and I might comment it today at the end of the podcast. I know it's been our lead story on Monday and Wednesday. I've got a couple of things, but we'll save that to the backside. Dave, let's start with the injury report because I think it's very interesting, and I think it's interesting to think who's going to be inactive because, you know, the Steelers didn't look effective. They're averaging 21.3 points a game. That's 16th in the NFL so far this year. They were 12th last year at 24.3, I think it was, points a game. You know, they haven't been the offense we've expected. Defensively, obviously, you know, Keith Butler spoke yesterday, not happy about things. So let's just, why don't you bring us up to date where we are, and then let's discuss who we think might play and might not play on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, things for a few players definitely moving in the right direction, and a few probably not so much. Not practicing again on Thursday were wide receiver Martavis Bryant and guard Ramon Foster. Bryant's dealing with an illness. That's 2 days in a row for him not practicing because of an illness. Ramon Foster with a thumb, and now you have to wonder if Ramon will be healthy enough to play Sunday against the Ravens. Obviously, if he doesn't, then B.J. Finney will get the start at left guard there. And, well, we'll talk about some fallout from potential Bryant as well here in a minute. After sitting out Wednesday's practice, two safeties, Mike Mitchell with a hamstring and Sean Davis with an ankle, were both limited on Thursday. So they're moving in the right direction. I think today, obviously, will be a big day in both those guys. But, look, Mike Mitchell has not missed a game so far during his Steelers career, so that hamstring, you know, and you have to wonder if that's kind of a re-aggravation, if you will, of maybe what he was dealing with there during training camp. But we'll watch those two safeties, you know, on Friday to see what the status report on those guys are. After practicing fully on Wednesday, Marcus Gilbert and that hamstring was limited on Thursday. You never like to see those guys with those soft tissue injuries going in the right direction. We'll see on Friday, but my guess is he might get shut down, but we'll see. Gilbert, of course, if he misses that game against the Ravens, it would leave Chris Hubbard starting again at right tackle. I think fairly decent news on Bud Dupree and Jesse James, both dealing with shoulder injuries. Both were limited again on Thursday. At right now, I kind of would expect both those guys to play against the Ravens. And then closing out the Thursday injury report with some positive news. T.J. Watt with a groin, Stephon Tuitt biceps, both practiced fully. Looks like they're on track to return to the field this week. And, of course, Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell, not injury-related. Both those guys sat out on Wednesday. They practice on Thursday there. So,
okay, let me give you a couple thoughts on that. One is, I absolutely expect Martavis Bryant to play. You know, if he's got the flu or a bug, you just keep him away from the team for a day or two. I expect him to be back today. I don't think there's any chance he's not playing. I mean, you rarely see guys who have an illness that lasts 5 days. So even, you know, Al Villanueva lost a bunch of weight. He went out there. So I don't think there's any question Bryant plays. I think
kind of counterpoint that there?
Sure.
And look, I mean, it's hard to envision Martavis Bryant not playing, dressing in this game. Why did this team decide to sign Justin Thomas back to the practice squad this week? Justin Hunter has apparently been told he's going to get a helmet this week. And C, Bryant is a guy that has, you know, let's face it, Martavis Bryant's made some nice catches this year. I commended him for that third down catch against the Vikings here a couple of weeks ago, key third down catch. He hasn't looked very sharp outside of that. And you know, let's not forget that he has missed the two practices with an illness. Now, I wouldn't go, you know, obviously Friday's injury report's going to mean a lot here, maybe, but I don't want to totally discount the possibility of Martavis Bryant being inactive, because if indeed Justin Hunter dresses, and there's no reason to think that he's not based on his comments, who's the wide receiver that's going to be down?
Well, we'll get into that. Now, I will say I think it's zero I'll put it at zero. So you're a little higher than that. Got it. We're both on record here. I just think, you know, Martavis Bryant is a key component of this team. And yeah, he didn't catch that first ball thrown to him in the game against the Bears. And by the way, the second play of the game, which we didn't really discuss, Antonio Brown's got single coverage on the outside. And if Ben lays it out there, he's got a touchdown. So, you know, I'll put a little bit more of the blame on Martavis than Ben on the first ball. I thought Ben laid it out there pretty well, and Martavis got to go get it. Wasn't perfect, obviously. The second one, Ben underthrew Antonio Brown by five steps. If he lays it out, Brown had to really slow up and go to the sideline. If he lays it out there, he's got a touchdown. So Steelers missed some opportunities right out of the chute in that game to, obviously not put the game away, but certainly change how the character of how that game went. And didn't get it done. So, Dave, on the wide receiver position, I think it's curious because, you know, I sat and thought about it for 20 minutes this morning. It's early here. We got started at 8:30 or so on the East Coast, which is obviously 5:30 Dave's time because, you know, he's always – it's, I don't know if it's early or late for Dave. It just is. I sat and I thought about it, and, you know, I just went back through the playbooks of the first three games. I mean, Eli Rogers' play got time got cut. He's been playing 50% of the snaps historically. He only played about 30% in this game. Juju got more snaps. Juju's obviously dressing. Antonio Brown's obviously dressing. There's not a scenario I can even remotely envision if Martavis Bryant's not on his deathbed that he's not dressing. And I got to think Eli dresses. So to me, I was looking at Hayward Bay. He played 16 special team snaps. I think he only played three offensive snaps last game. There were five guys who played more special team snaps than Hayward Bay. I mean, look, I guess if you're only going to you could dress six receivers, and then we get into the William Gay, Cody Sensabaugh, James Harrison, you know, even James Conner, if you want to get into that, you get into other guys, or Terrell Watson, you get into other guys, what would you do about who would you sit? But if you're only going to dress five receivers, it's Houston or Hayward Bay. And if they told Houston he's going to play, then the receiver who sits is Hayward Bay. Now, maybe they dress six, but I would still think Houston doesn't get a helmet. Yeah, you know, but, you know.
Hunter. Not
I mean,
Houston.
Sorry. Yeah, right. Houston.
Justin Houston.
I had a guy just tweet at me. I think Houston and Dupree play. So, sorry. So Hunter, 100 times. So I don't know if Hunter's going to play, then I think Hayward Bay sits if a receiver sits.
Here's the thing. Danny Smith likes him some DHB, and if you pull DHB off, what player replaces him on special teams? That's a tough choice. And B, it's not going to be Justin Hunter that does it.
It's not going to be Justin Hunter. Then can you fill it with Mike Hilton? Can you, you know, there are guys, Cody Sensabaugh, Mike Hilton, you know what, a little surprising, circle back to the story. I don't see the Steelers dressing two running backs. I think all three will definitely dress. But it's interesting that James Conner, we talked in the last podcast about how he didn't get on the field. He only played three special team snaps. You remember what Kevin Colbert said draft day? I'm a little surprised we're not seeing more of James Conner on special teams.
I'm trying to remember if he's playing, if that might be due to the kickoffs or what.
Yeah. Well, right. They only kicked off a couple times, and that's where you expect to see him on kick coverage, right. Most notably. But, you know, you would think we can talk forever about it, the Steeler return game and who they choose to use. But, I mean, is Terrell Watson clearly a better option than James Conner on kick return? I mean, you know, I don't always – you know, we've talked about this for years, what the Steelers do. I mean, why isn't he an option back there?
Yeah, good question. I like high diddle send Watson up the middle, though. I could stand to see a little bit maybe more of that maybe on a Sunday, but he's obviously third on the depth chart. Connor going to get in the game before him. Can't see him not dressing three running backs regardless. David, I keep going back to opening thoughts there.
So let's name the for sure inactives. Dobbs and Allen – and McCullers, right? Those three for sure.
Yeah, you would think. Now the
healthy and active. Those three.
Right. Now the only thing is if you did not dress. Allen all depends on both those safeties, I think. You know, those two injured safeties. So you're obviously assuming Mitchell and Sean Davis are fine.
I'm assuming they will dress, yes.
Okay, I will as well, too. So, yeah, those three guys, healthy scratches.
Okay, so I'm going to assume both starting offensive linemen are down. Foster, we haven't heard much about the hand, but look, if your hand's not going Wednesday, Thursday, your hand's not going Friday. I can't see it. Gilbert, I'm going to look at it the same way we looked at the hamstring with Tuitt, the same way we looked with the biceps the biceps with Tuitt, the hamstring with TJ Watt. So I'm going to assume Gilbert gets the extra week here, so he's down as well.
Yeah, that's a safe bet. So you got Dobbs, Foster, Gilbert, Allen,
McCullers. And then it goes back to your question about the linebackers. I mean, is it Dupree, Moats, or Harrison?
Well, I mean, you would think Dupree's been – you would think Dupree's going to play.
The way you are maybe with Martavis Bryant, that's where I am with Dupree. Limited on Thursday? I don't know.
Yeah, if he goes full today, which I expect him to, I think he's good to go. Here's the funny thing. Everybody that's been questionable so far this year has been inactive.
Yeah.
We'll see if that obviously continues there. And look, you named it's going to be one wide receiver, so it's going to either be DHB or
Hunter.
Or Bryant. That's down. I think
it's or Hunter.
No, I think right. I mean Hunter said he's playing, so there's no reason.
Well,
not
did he say he's playing or he thinks he's playing? I mean, you know.
I think he said he's been told he's getting a helmet this week.
Okay. Well, I would say for me it's Hunter or DHB. For you it's Bryant or DHB. And then that gets you to Moats and Harrison. I think.
Yeah, it does.
Unless it could be I mean, it's probably not going to be Sensabaugh or Gay. You're not going to sit two corners. There's no one. I don't think it'll be Grimble. And if it's not going to be a running back, that doesn't leave you anybody else. It leaves you, you know, one of those three linebackers, depending on your view of Dupree.
And if you assume Dupree's going to play, I think you maybe can throw LJ Fort in that conversation, maybe. But look, if you have who's more valuable to you on special teams, James Harrison or Arthur Moats?
I guess Moats played a few snaps, so I guess it's Moats, but.
And Moats can play both sides, right and left. So can Chickalo, right and left. I mean, I know James Harrison can as well, but assuming you get TJ Watt back, this goes back to what I said a few weeks ago. Don't be surprised at some point during this season if James Harrison is a healthy scratch, and James Harrison has only played 7 total defensive snaps so far, so it's not out of the question to think that he could be a inactive list candidate this week. We'll see what this final injury report says, but I'll have a lot to think. I usually write up my official inactive predictions Saturday after the transaction cutoff time is made, and I'm 100% on the last 2 weeks and only missed one in week one there, so I have a lot to think about, but I'm leaning towards putting Harrison in that 7th spot as we sit here right now.
Okay, I'd be shocked, but I understand the logic. So let's talk about one thing that we didn't talk about that happened last week that went under the radar. What the hell are the Steelers doing with Stevie Johnson and LJ Fort?
Yeah, I don't have a clue, man. I mean, I wish I had more of an idea, you know, other than trying to get some of those guys, you know, some full paychecks.
I mean, literally, it almost feels like it's like they're alternating weeks for paychecks. I mean, it's crazy. My only other
take on it is it somehow revolves around the availability of J.J. Wilcox. If you go back and look.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see the connection. I mean, I guess, you know.
Because you got, you know, because I guess more of a big-bodied guy, dime, you know, maybe one, you know, having one gives you the ability maybe to play a little bit more dime, and without him, maybe you're forced to play a little bit more nickel. You know, that's the only thing I can really kind of come up with, David, is it somehow revolves around. We'll know for sure next time when and if J.J. Wilcox gets injured maybe and has to be inactive. Does that result? And maybe it's special teams related too. There's spots on the kick return and potential punt return as well too.
I've thought about all these things and it just seems way too minutia to be, you know, something like that, that, you know, this guy in this spot on kick return and then not on the roster. I mean, I never understood why they got rid of Fort. I never understood why they signed Stevie and then cut him that same week. I just none of it. I'm sure there's a plan behind it. It's just very difficult for me to see. All right. So
you know me, that's my job. I love minutia. I'm full of minutia.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if we find it, because I know nobody's going to ask about it, but we'll see where it goes. Now let's get into the.
Hey,
Dad,
that's one thing. If you were in press conferences, that's probably one thing you would ask about, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Mike would not give an answer to that one for sure. Okay, so let's get into the most interesting topic of the week on the field that didn't actually take place on the field. Is Ben suggesting that Mike sent him out for the overtime and told him if they won the toss, they won to kick? I mean, that might have superseded everything that happened had the Steelers kicked and the Bears gone down the field like they did receiving the ball. If that had happened when the Steelers made the choice to kick, that might actually have been the lead story. That might have actually trumped some of the other, pun intended, some of the other stuff that happened, because that would, I would have gone insane. And I imagine a lot of our listeners, although I did have plenty of people on Twitter tell me they understood the logic. Well, we can all understand what Mike's thinking was, clearly was kick him the ball, stop him and get good field position and win with the field goal. We get the logic. It's just insane with your Hall of Fame quarterback, your Hall of Fame receiver, Le'Veon Bell, even though they haven't been good, it's insane that you would not give them the first opportunity. To me, Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I was more upset about this immediately after Ben had said it than I have than I am now. Kind of going back and trying to wonder and work through the process of maybe why that decision was made. And look, I mean, we all know they got gashed by the running game, the defense against the Bears, but they didn't have a bad second half when it comes to stopping a run, and it kind of looked like they obviously didn't fix everything, but they made a lot of progress there. They almost forced a couple. You know, they did force one turnover. They almost had two others. Mike Mitchell drops an interception, and the ball just didn't bounce the right way for J.J. Wilcox and all. And on the flip side, there was really nothing positive about the Steelers' offense. So maybe Tomlin's thinking, okay, we've kind of settled down against the run. Maybe we'll get in a situation here, and Glennon hasn't been sharp against the pass here. Maybe we can force him into a quick three and out, get some field position here, get a couple of first downs, and get the hell out of Chicago.
Let me ask you this. Let me just very simply ask it this way. Is there any scenario that's not weather related where if you were a head coach in today's overtime world where you would not with this team where you would not take the ball?
Yeah, probably not. But yeah. like I said, just trying to work through.
We all know what he was thinking. I mean, look, I get it. I don't agree with it. Period. That's it. Everything you laid out is exactly right and exactly what Mike, you know, was the logic Mike was thinking. I just don't think it's the right thing. You got an offense that's supposed to be great. It's not a great Bears defense. They got to play better. You know, if he's looking and he knows something that we don't from more than just the visuals that they weren't good, because obviously they weren't very good. then okay, so be it. That we'll never know the answer to that. But I just, you just got to take the football in my mind. And I know not everybody agrees, but you just do it every time. I don't think there's a team in the NFL that basically probably shouldn't pursue that line of thinking.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I was, I'm less ticked off about it now than when I first heard it. But I can only imagine had been called heads instead of tails.
Yeah.
The way this week would have been more discussion.
Okay. So that was that issue.
How about, was that the same Bears team that the Steelers lost to that played Thursday night?
You know, the only thing I can throw out as a flip side argument of this is Case Keenum and the Vikings went home and took Tampa, a decent Tampa defense apart, and Case Keenum threw three touchdowns and 359 yards. So, you know, the answer is the Bears looked like hell last night. They turned it over, you know, seemingly every time they touched the ball. They got smoked. They couldn't stop the pass. Well, the Packers didn't have to do much, but they couldn't stop them when they needed to. But they were on the road against a division rival on a short week. The Vikings went home and got a team coming in, and the team the Steelers made look inept offensively ran it up and looked fantastic. So, you know, I don't want, you know, the parity, the home and away stuff, the 3 weeks, 4 weeks into the season, these things happen. I mean, that's kind of the only decent answer I have. I'll just go back to the Steelers' game plan was disastrously bad in not making Mike Glennon beat him, which was a huge, huge tactical mistake, which, you know, one of the bigger ones we've seen in years, in my opinion. But getting past that, yeah, that's the best I got for you.
Yeah, a couple of those early turnovers, and then you know, getting behind on the scoreboard there. But I mean, that was the Bears team last night that we had scouted prior to the prior to the game against the Steelers. So in other words, the Bears are who we thought they were, and the Steelers let them off the hook, if you will. But it just goes to show you. What early turnovers can do to a team, especially one that just is miserable at quarterback. I've got to talk about this. I know it's turning into Bears Depot, but you're down 28 points. I get it, but it's the start of the fourth quarter. Why are you grinding clock? And look, kudos for putting together a 15-play, 75-yard drive in 8 minutes and 53 seconds. But you're down you're down 28 points at the time. Should John Fox be questioned about waving the white flag at the start of the fourth quarter? I mean, you got a whole quarter left. Anything can happen.
I pretty much checked out. I was watching the end of Texas Iowa State. I mean, they weren't going to win that game. Anything could happen, but it's 1 in 100. So
all right. I mean, I just that really aggravated me. Okay, things been said this week. A lot along the lines of what we talked about on the on the Wednesday show there as well too. You know, we'd already talked about him talking about on Tuesday radio show about him locking into AB too much. He admits he's got to start taking what the defense gives him, not so many more deep shots and all. And then, you know, remember me also saying on the Wednesday podcast, I look for the Steelers to really go back to simplicity here and keep it simple, stupid, kind of method game plan here. And, you know, Jesse James on Thursday and David DeCastro both kind of talked about that they're really going to keep things on the simple side here. Now,
I think Vance McDonald chimed in as well.
Yeah, Vance, what did I say? Did I say Jesse?
Jesse, yeah.
Okay, I meant Vance McDonald there. David,
look, I when I get a favorite stat, I usually like to stay on that thing until people are ready to jump off the bridge there. And yeah, everybody knows my fascination with the adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat for both defense and offense. I love that. I'll never let that one go. The talk stat before that one as well too, but. You know, with this next gen stats and all, and this isn't a new stat. It's just become kind of a little bit more accessible as far as league wide goes. This new average yards differential stat, I love. I mean, I absolutely love this thing. And I think, you know, we've already talked a little bit about the global numbers, if you will, when talking about. You know, Ben Roethlisberger and on all downs of what is passed, what his intended distance is, what his completed distance is, and how big that differential is, and how it's the largest in the league right now. I went through and broke down because, you know, we chart all the distances as well for the site, and I broke it down by passing target distance as well too. And boy, you ought to see some of the gaps here when it comes to Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown, obviously the two highest target receivers that the Steelers have. Let me ask you this, and if you don't know the answer, maybe one of our math nerds, stat geeks out there that good with numbers and all will guide me in the right direction here as well too. Yeah, when you have a large selection of numbers, you know, let's say even in a single game, 25 or more passing attempts, and you have varying distances along with that, is it best to use the is it best to find the average like that, or is it better to find a median of the two numbers and then work with those? You see what I'm getting at?
I do think sample size is very important here. I think, you know,
if you're using, you know, just five pass distances, right. it's almost like what Joe Thomas said the other day.
Yes, exactly. And that's why single game using, you know, when we take things to two decimal points, it's somewhat ridiculous.
I do that.
right. It's a bit much. And when we use numbers off of single games, or even look, we have three games of data. I like to start looking through NFL team stats at this point. I think it starts to be relevant after this week. And then we get into some substance. At 5 weeks, I think you really have something. You know, 3 weeks, do you still look? How about this? And I tweeted this morning when I was looking at the Steelers points per game stuff. The Rams were dead last in the NFL last year at 14.0 points per game, 32nd. They are first in the NFL this year at 35.7 points per game. That's a, you know, Jared Goff. You remember 3 weeks into last season when everybody said, man, did the Rams make the biggest mistake ever? Carson Wentz goes two. He's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. Jared Goff's already a bust. Jared Goff under McVay looks really good. Carson Wentz doesn't look like he's taken a big step forward here so far. Very, you know, and this is the same thing about talking when people talk about the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell's done or Ben's done or whatever. We're 3 weeks in, folks. Let's pump the brakes on big overarching views on things.
Well, I mean, do you know what's better to, you know, average or median or both or what?
I think with big robust sample size, average is fine. With smaller sizes, you probably want to look at the median.
Okay, and let me ask you this: Next Gen Stats states that they don't. For passes that are thrown behind the line of scrimmage, being as how we use passing distances past the line of scrimmage, they don't use negative numbers. They calculate everything at zero. Is that right, or should the negative behind the yardage numbers be used? You know, not that it's going to, it's not like he's passing 10 yards behind the line.
Right. I think zero is fine because I think you're, you know, what's your biggest number going to be on a really deep drop on a screen? You're throwing the ball forward, but it might be 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. But, Yeah, I don't think that's – I think that's noise. No big deal.
Okay, so you zero there. All right, and if any
Let me
you...
throw one other thing out when we're talking about next-gen stats, because both you and I tweeted this out. Separation, receiver separation, and this is – you know, we talk about Ben finding receivers college open, and one thing is he's good. He's typically very accurate with receivers three or plus more yards open. Ben was, I think, ninth in the league last year in terms of completion percentage at the low 80%. Good passer rating. He is 28th this year at 70%. 70% still a good number, but you know, guys aren't 3 yards open all that often in the NFL. You expect with that kind of separation that you should be completing, 85 to 90%. So just something to keep an eye on, and something we've been talking about here early in the season. I mean, Ben this week was critical of himself and took blame for saying, if I played better, we win that football game. And he's right. He's got to play better. And it's been 3 games now. So another game on the road this week with the Ravens, the Steelers need better from Ben Roethlisberger.
And in short, what that stat said was Ben is not hitting his college open receivers.
Right.
And now here's something else. So on those next gen stats as well too, and he's never really, this plays into what I think we hit on this the other day as well too. He's not a very aggressive quarterback as far as throwing into covered receivers either. You know, that 19.1% aggressive percentage number that next gen has is third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. Lowest in the league as well too. So he's still not throwing into tight windows, but when those guys are open, he's missing the throws. And that's probably about your difference right now, right? I mean, that's your difference in several of these situations. Why maybe he's missing? Why the offense probably hasn't taking that kind of the next jump there, obviously in addition to not running the ball great, but I thought they ran the ball pretty decent against Chicago. I mean, obviously you're still lacking that bigger run or two, but they did have a couple of those called back, in that game due to penalties. 16 yards on two of those runs there sure would have been nice to have. And something else that I pointed out on the previous podcast as well too, getting in all these third and long situations is certainly not helping things, especially with a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger, who not one that likes to dump it off short of the chains on third down generally. So I think all those kind of things, the missing the open wide receivers and not being aggressive, the getting themselves in the third and long situations has sort of kind of created the perfect storm, if you will, with 3 games into the season. Now, these next three games, we're going to have a lot of data, a lot of tape to play with here. One should expect Ben Roethlisberger road games, home games, whatever, to play better than he's played in these first 3 games. And if he does not, then yes, you might want to look around to where your emergency exits are on the plane at that point.
Yeah. Okay, let's get on
the. Well, let me just throw it quick out to the listeners there. Those math questions that I asked, any of you calculus, stats, statistics majors out there, let me know what your thoughts are.
Applied mathematics majors, what you're looking for there.
Okay.
Applied math majors.
Okay, great. TheTerriblePodcast@gmail.com. David, you may not realize this, and the listeners as well, I'm not a highly educated guy.
So just for those who don't know, maybe we've got some younger listeners or not numbers inclined people. So average is the sum of them divided by the number. You get an average. The median is the middle point. So as we were talking to Dave mentioned the Joe Thomas example, if you have a bunch of 1, 2, and 3 yard runs, if you have three each of those and a 60 yard run, then your total might be 75 divided by 10. Your average is 7.5. But the median, the middle number, which in this case we use 10, so there's not a dead middle number, but it might be 2.5, 2 or 3, depending on what it is. It would be the middle point, not the average. So just that's kind of if you want a background what we were talking about there. Okay, Dave, defensive side of the ball. I've got an answer. And Keith Butler said they're going to do some things differently. Obviously, he's not going to share the game plan. But I think one of the big problems here against the outside zone, against the Bears, and we talked about all the missed tackles, and it's been written about in a variety of different places, the Steelers have got to slow their roll on the run blitz. And what's been happening is you saw it on the touchdown run where Vince Williams filled the wrong gap. We've seen Shazier shoot gaps repeatedly and miss tackles. Dave, particularly the two guys inside, I think they need to be assignment specific, gap specific, and not try to be shooting gaps and getting guys behind the line of scrimmage. If everybody, you know, does their job, then they can slow this run game down. I think they've got to stop the run blitzes. Doesn't mean don't attack the line of scrimmage. Just they got to do a better job.
Yeah, and staying on your feet, those defensive linemen help as well, too. With Tyson Alulu on the ground. I think maybe Cam Hayward on the ground once or twice there. The flow, I mean, those Vince Williams was letting himself get cut off, you know, by those by that next level. Either center guard, if you will. You can't let those guys cross your face like that. On those outside zone runs and look, all it takes is for one of those defensive linemen to get cut off. One of your inside linebackers to have his face crossed, and you're gonna have those lanes. And if you're not having your cornerbacks come. I still think it goes back to a lot, you know, by the play of the inside linebackers and the defensive backs in this game. You've got to have safeties and cornerbacks that can come up and fill those gaps and take good angles and make the tackles. It's okay to give up an 8 or 12 yard run. In certain situations, I thought Mike Tomlin said it best. There are going to be holes at times, but you can't let those 8 and 12-yard, 13-yard plays, not only can you not let them happen consistently, but you can't let those become 30 and 40-yard plays. That's the biggest difference because if you go back, David, and you watch a lot of those outside zone runs to either side, they played quite a few of them well, but it's like anything else and kind of I think what we talked about on the show the other day. If you got to have confidence as an offense that you can run that and that you can pop several of those, not only for 8 to 13 yards, but you can pop the 30, the 28 and the 40 yard runs. And that's what happened in that game. They kind of wore the Steelers defense down, if you will, eventually. And we saw what happened in the overtime period there. So it's not just the run blitz. I don't think that got the Steelers in trouble against the outside zone. There's just, I mean, there, you name it and it went wrong. Missed tackles, over pursuit by the inside linebackers, getting cut off at the second level there by the inside linebackers, men on the ground at up front of the defensive line, and then your outside linebackers probably could have squeezed it maybe a little bit better as well, but there were some lanes there, that's for sure. And it'd be interesting now. Look, we're fixing to preview this Ravens game. This is a Ravens offense that can run that outside zone, and you can bet your bottom dollar they're going to come out trying to run the football. I thought Keith Butler said it best in his talk with the media on Thursday. They want to protect Joe Flacco, and they know that they can run that outside zone. They saw what the Bears did to us meaning the Steelers' run defense in that game against the Bears. So that's one of the things I expect the Bears to kind of come out and try to do early.
The Ravens to come out and do early.
What did I say, Raiders?
The Bears.
Oh, yeah. the Ravens, okay. Them too.
look, Dave, this is a game where the Ravens pass game is, I think, a question mark. The run game, Kenneth Dixon's gone. This is not a potent Ravens offense. They're well below the Steelers in points per game. I think they're averaging something like 16 or something like that. You know, make Joe Flacco beat you again. I mean, do what you have to do in the run game. As you said, stay on your feet. Feet, assignment, sound, fill the gaps. Don't worry about the run blitzes. And then let Flacco go after you. And they'll throw those screens. They'll use the fullback in the passing game against the Steelers. But the receivers, you know, it's not an overly dynamic, proven group. I mean, obviously, everybody knows the play where Mike Wallace takes the slant and he Artie goes for the – I think it was Artie who went to knock the pass down and couldn't get it and make the tackle. And then Mike Mitchell took not a great angle, and Wallace is at full speed. And so a little 5-yard slant goes for 85, and it's a touchdown. And that kind of – you know, that blew that game up. Don't give up the big play and keep the run game in check. And, you know, the Steelers should win this game. But after coming a road game against a team that you think is more impotent than the Ravens offensively and the Bears and losing the game and having an offense that for 3 weeks hasn't really looked good. They've put a drive together here and there, but it's been the Antonio Brown show and nothing else. Le'Veon Bell hasn't been – he's been as pedestrian as Ben has. And nobody else has looked particularly good. The offensive line hasn't looked dominant at any point in time. So I don't know that – look, one game against the Bears isn't going to change my view of who this team is. But this is now – this will be a quarter of the way through the season. And you'd like to see them put up, you know, the offensive performance at least once that we've been looking for.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw some of those stats that I broke down this past week about the Steelers running game and out of particular positional, you know, for personnel groupings. Their best running, and it's only three games so far, but their best running have come out of 11 personnel, which is of course three wide receivers and one tight end. They've had 40 non-quarterback rushes, and they're averaging 3.85 yards per carry, but they have a successful run rate of 42.5%. Anything else out of either a multiple tight end or a fullback and one tight end has been crappy, and that's been 33% of the runs, David. 33.33 two decimal points have been with a running out of two or more tight ends or one tight end and a fullback with a running back there. That the success rate on those 20 runs, absolutely miserable, and the yards per carry, absolutely. You throw out that one, you know, they ran the 13 personnel, three tight ends in that game against the Vikings. They've only done that once, and that was that play that James Conner had the 9 yards off the right side there. If you throw that run out, I mean, you're looking at right at maybe two yards per carry when they have 2 yards per carry when they have a you know, more than one tight end on the field. So something to pay attention to. I don't know. Maybe because they're telling Justin Hunter to dress. Maybe we're going to see maybe some more four wide receiver sets this week against the Ravens, and them try to get them in a situation, you know, where they have a smaller defense, if you will, on the field there. So, you know, that's something to pay attention to. But they absolutely have to run better against the Ravens this week. Personally, David, I think you're going to see some dink and dunk in this game. I think you need to get, as it goes back to what I said the other day, I think you need to get Ben Roethlisberger in a rhythm. People ain't going to like this. Maybe a few bubble screens early on, some RPOs, most definitely. And people tend to forget, David, that you know, some of those bubble screens are part of RPOs versus what Ben Roethlisberger sees and how that that's dictated where the football goes in there. But some quick slants, some quick outs and all. Just get yourself in a situation where you're facing a second and five or four, and ultimately a third and less than 5 yards. If you do that, I think you're going to be fine in this football game, even against a good defense like the Ravens. And this is not a game that I don't think you want Ben Roethlisberger standing in the pocket, especially if Chris Hubbard has to play in place of Marcus Gilbert. Alejandro Villanueva is not one that you want to stand back in the pocket over 3 seconds, 4 seconds. And there he's kind of off to a rough start in certain situations here. Terrell Suggs has been Terrell Suggs still. And that's what I expect this offense to do, kind of rhythmic dink and dunk. He's still going to take his shots down the field there, and he should, because there's going to be situations in some third, some second and threes or less where give you an opportunity to take some shots down the field. But that's how, if I'm the Steelers, I want to go back to kind of simple here, run the power and all that I just said, and get this offense into a groove. And I think if you do that, running game opens up. And if the running game opens up some, then, of course, play action opens up. And there you go.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, look, this when the Steelers offense was effective against Chicago, it was the shallow crosses, which, again, Ben's got to take what's available, as you pointed out. Eli Rogers has got to be in the game. I like the intermediate middle of the field. But against this safety combo, which might be the best the Steelers face all season, maybe that's going to be a less viable alternative. We'll see what exactly the Ravens line up in defensively, what kind of, if they play single high or two high safeties. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Tony, the kid from Arizona, Jefferson, Tony Jefferson, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how he plays, because he can be a box safety. He can do some different things. He's a versatile guy on that defense. So I think, it'll be hard to see on the television if that's how you're watching a game until the All-22 comes out. But he would be a guy on that defense that, if I'm Ben, that's what I'm looking at. Weddle is a ball hawking free safety type of player. So it'll be interesting to see how Jefferson's used and what they do with him. And I think that will be most notable. The other point here, Brandon Williams not being able to go. I'm guessing he doesn't go in this game. That's a huge loss for the Ravens. I mean, that's a guy who, and we heard Mike talk about him on Tuesday. He mentioned going back to Haloti Ngata and, all the way back into kind of the history with Timmy Jernigan, different guys that the Ravens have had there to be run stoppers. Brandon Williams is as good as they get. And we talked about him in the offseason, how we felt like the Ravens were going to lose him and what a loss that would be. They ended up finding the money to sign him, and that was a big deal. But it doesn't look like the Steelers are going to see him Sunday. So, all right.
And that's big, big. Look, even if he plays right now, he's not 100% with that foot. And he hasn't practiced he didn't practice all last week ahead of the game against the Jaguars. He hasn't practiced either day this week so far. He's been on a stationary bike. Logic tells you he's not going to play, but even if he does, he's not going to be able to play a full complement of snaps. He's not going to be at 100%. Michael Pierce and Carl Davis would be the ones to combination replace them. Of course, they kind of run those kind of hybrid different fronts at times. But make no mistake, too, remember that they lost, we talked about this earlier in the week, they lost Brent Urban, a starter as well on the defensive line this past week. So there is absolutely no reason, I don't care if Brandon Williams or plays or not in this game, there is no reason for us to come out of that, for you and I to be talking on Monday saying, man, why is it that the Steelers just can't get this offensive line together and open up some holes for Le'Veon Bell? And the flip side, why can't Le'Veon Bell get some yardage there? This is the week to run. To run early, to force the run, whatever you want to call it. This is the week to do it, and then to have, to have a nice little rhythmic passing game with Roethlisberger. It'll be very disappointing, David, if you and I are on Monday saying, damn, why the hell can't, you know, why the hell, you know, we understand that they fell behind to the Bears and 50 and game situations, yada, yada. Bell ended up with 15 carries. If he doesn't touch the ball 25 total, you know, 20 to at least 20 times, but it better be around 25 times. If Bell doesn't touch the ball 25 times in this game, we got some splaining to do.
Yeah, he's going to get going in the passing game as well. So let's hope that we see the 150 yards from scrimmage from Le'Veon Bell here finally. All right, Dave, let's roll into the picks for the week. And we both finally got a Thursday game right. We're both on the Packers last night, and they won.
Hey, 3 units.
Okay. All right. Are we sharing that or what?
Hey, it's not often did I get a 3-unit win on Thursday night.
send me some Boston rump.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead. We'll start rolling through these. I got to pull my notepad up so it makes it easier tabulating these things as we go through.
All right. Saints Dolphins in Miami. Miami plus 3. The Saints went on the road and won in Carolina last week. The Dolphins went to New York and lost to the Jets. That was probably, you know, as surprising as the Steelers' loss in Cleveland. You know, questions about Jay Cutler already 3 weeks into the season. Who are the Saints? This is a really tough game to handicap. I'm going to play the home and away game again, even though the Saints did win on the road last week. And I'm going to take Miami plus 3.
Well, yeah, oh boy, this one's a tough one, right? Saints have problems playing on the back end. And Miami just been, you know, I don't think we've seen enough of them to know who they really are. Lawrence Timmons potentially back for this game. Man, it just comes down to quarterback play. I can't get away from it. I think the Saints gave me a win last week. I'm going to try to ride them here. I'm going to take, and you're showing 3, you said. I'm going to take Saints minus 3 on the road.
Carolina getting 9 in New England. New England, so obviously the Patriots are 2-1, and they snuck out a win. You know, I don't know. I think everybody saw the touchdown pass to Brandon Cooks. What they probably don't realize is they converted some long plays in that drive. I think they faced a 2nd and 18 and a 3rd and 12 and ended up getting, you know, enough to continue the drive to win that game, and they got the 2-point conversion. So they did what they needed to do. The Steelers obviously didn't do what they needed to do. Rodgers and Brady in their 2 games were able to bring their teams back, and Ben couldn't do it in full. The Patriots, I'm a little bit worried about their defense, but I'm just not a buyer of Cam Newton anymore these days. I think Christian McCaffrey's good. I think Carolina's an okay team, but I feel like the Patriots now are going to put up 30 in their sleep. So I think 9's not enough. I'll take the Pats winning by double digits.
Boy, that Patriots defense, though, David, is not what, you know.
They are not fast is what they aren't. They are not fast.
They've had some issues and all, and I think a quarterback here's the thing. The Panthers have got to allow Cam Newton to use his legs a little bit, roll him out some. They might not have Kelvin Benjamin for this game, but I think you can do some things with McCaffrey as well, too. I don't think the Panthers win this, David. I think the Patriots obviously have enough firepower offensively to get it done. I just think 9's too much. So give me I'm going opposite. We're going opposite here. Panthers plus 9.
Okay. Third game of the week, we got the Rams at Dallas, and Dallas finally looked good. Dak only threw it 18 times, but he completed 13. A couple, you know, he loves that kind of bootleg rollout to the right side, and he completed a couple long passes. Some good plays by the receivers. Ezekiel Elliott had a nice game. That was a game that I thought Arizona had a chance. Certainly they dominated the first 25 minutes of that game and ended up going into the half 7-7. So you knew they had kind of squandered their opportunity. And, you know, do you buy the Rams offensively? We think of them as being good defensively, and that Brian Hoyer and the Niners just chewed them up, absolutely chewed them up. Dave, I know everybody in the world is going to be on Dallas in this game, so I'm going to just be counter-trend here and take the Rams and just cross my fingers that they can put up 24 points, and that's going to be enough.
Well, I don't think you spit out a line there. 6.5?
6, sorry. Dallas minus 6.
I think the Cowboys are going to do a lot what the 49ers did in this game. I got to see more from Jared Goff. Todd Gurley obviously is a talented guy. I just need to see more from the Rams. I like what they're doing on the defense. Obviously, big Wade Phillips fan here, but I think the Cowboys win this by a touchdown. So thus, I'm going to lay the 6.
Just going back to the pass for 1 second, talking about the speed on defense. Their starting linebackers are Kyle Van Noy, David Harris on the outside, Dont'a Hightower on the inside. It's just a lack of speed there, something to pay attention to going forward this season. All right, game 4, Detroit at Minnesota. Detroit plus 1.5. Did you feel bad for the Lions in the way the game ended on Sunday?
Refresh me.
Golden Tate down at the goal line, 8 seconds left. They review it. 10 second runoff.
Yeah. You really have to. Yeah, absolutely. There. I mean, they're a decent team. I think they're going to still struggle to kind of run the football. Talking about the Lions.
Yeah, I like both these teams. And this is going to be – I think it's a very interesting division. The Bears, obviously, the weak sister of the division. But I think the Lions, the Vikings, and the Packers are all good football teams. Maybe aside from the Falcons, it's the second, third, and fourth best team in the division. I'll just take the home team. I'll take the Vikings minus 1.5. But put me on the Matt Stafford bandwagon as, you know, now maybe the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the NFL. I'd take him over everybody – not named Ben Brady, Rodgers, and Breeze right now, I think.
You know, the Vikings in this game this past week, Case Keenum, I mean, his stats they tell you he was great, but he really got away with some inaccuracy in that game, I thought, when I went back through it.
He hit Thielen and Diggs on some beautiful passes, deep balls, I thought. You know, he did. You're right, he did get away with a couple, but he was on the money on some deep balls. I was impressed.
That combo, Thielen and Diggs, that's an exciting duo right now. I understand they have Case again in this game, but I like what the Vikings do defensively once again as well too. I'm riding the Vikings. I might ride the Vikings all year, David. Point and a half.
Yeah, minus 1.5. We're both on them. A really interesting divisional game with Tennessee going to the Texans. And Deshaun Watson made a believer out of a lot of people, not just with his legs, but you know, with what he did throwing the football for the Texans. Again, this is a team that you think defense first. You think Rams, Texans, you think defense. They both gave up 30-plus last week, a ton of points. The Titans, they were a lot of people's darling coming into the season. They had the one bad loss, but they seemed to have it back together. They blew out Jacksonville. They had a blowout win again this week. I think they're the real deal. I don't know. I wouldn't touch this game with a 10-foot pole. I don't know where to go with it. I'd like the Titans enough to take him here, Dave, but, you know, Titans minus 2, I'll take him, but I'm not touching this one.
Well, it's the old Dick LeBeau versus the rookie quarterback stat, right? Does it apply here? Sure it does. I think he'll do enough to confuse Watson and Watson turn the football over. I like the Titans to win by a touchdown in this. So minus 2 for me as well.
Okay. The Jags minus 3 at the Jets. Give me the Jags. I'm a big believer in the defense and they should be able to run the football.
Yeah, and Forte's banged up. I mean, it's not going well for the Jets like many of us thought it would. But they did get a win this past week. But
impressive.
Jaguars minus 3 for me as well.
Bengals at the Browns. Give me the Browns plus 3 at home. Deshaun Kizer wasn't great, but did a little bit in the second half. Starting to, you know, maybe get his sea legs a little bit. The Bengals played the Packers really tough. It just goes to show every team that was 0-2 except one went out last week. They didn't all win. The Browns and the Bengals lost close games, but a lot of them won, and I think there was only one team that got smoked at 0-2. So you know, teams know their seasons are on the line here. For the Browns, this is going to be, you know, does the start of the mutiny happen if they go 0-4? I'm going to take the Browns plus the 3 and give the Browns on an outright win.
Wow. Look, Bengals, it's probably already over for them, but definitely 0-4, it's going to be over for them. They showed a little bit against the Packers. No way the Bengals lose this game, David. This is my stone cold lock of the century of the week. Bengals -3. I think they blow the Browns out.
All right. Buffalo at Atlanta. Buffalo getting 8. Too many. Falcons win this game, but I'll take the 8 with the Bills. Tyrod Taylor can do some things. They got Shady. The Bills are a better team than they're getting credit for, I think. They're going to be 8-8. This isn't one they're going to win, but I think they'll be in most games.
When that offense is on for the Falcons, it's on, right? And if they get that opposing quarterback in certain situations there and can pin their ears back, they're fine. They're at home, David. Chick-fil-A won't be open, but the Falcons, but the Falcons offense will. Falcons -8.
For those who don't know, there's a new Chick-fil-A in the Georgia Dome, or whatever they call the new stadium down there. And Chick-fil-A obviously doesn't open on Sundays, and that's when the Falcons play. So a little bit of – they do play other events there, obviously. So way it is open at times. But
Did we talk about this? Do you have a Chick-fil-A up there?
There's a new one on Route 8, and there's one on the way to St. Vincent's. I'm a Chick-fil-A fan, so.
Oh, yeah, we both, me and my wife, big, big Chick-fil-A fans, have been for years, and we got a couple of them out here in Vegas now, so good deal.
I've been out there. Tampa -3 against the Giants. Giants season, this heartbreaking way to lose, down 14-0, score 3 touchdown passes from Manning, 2 to Beckham, 1 to Shepard on a long slant, where he ran through the defense. But I'm a Tampa fan. I'm on the Tampa bandwagon for the season here. Jameis Winston and the weapons that they have. Give me Tampa -3 at home. Giants 0-4, season over.
Boy, there's no way Giants can go 0-4, right? I mean, obviously there is a way because they're 0-3. McAdoo job in jeopardy if they get to that point. I mean, this is a team that obviously is drafted for now. But and look, I'm not a big Eric Flowers fan and all like that. They gotta find a way to have Eli get that football out of his hands to some of his weapons. David, I think the Giants get their first W. I don't think the Buccaneers are who we think maybe they are. I think this is a close game, but I think the Giants squeak this out with win it by 1 point. Giants +3.
Okay, Eagles at the Chargers. The Chargers are a team. They're the team that got blown out. They're 0-3. They're not that bad. The Eagles got to go across the country. They're coming off a joyous win on the 61-yard field goal, and Carson Wentz offering up his game check. By the way, Deshaun Watson, kudos to Deshaun Watson for those who didn't see. Deshaun Watson gave his game check to 3 women in the Houston Texans cafeteria who had lost their homes. He split it 3 ways and gave his game check to those 3 women. Kudos to the Texans and everything J.J. Watt did, and big kudos to Deshaun Watson for doing that. Dave, long-winded way to get to Chargers -1.5. They get on the win schedule here.
I'll go with you. Chargers lay those points. I think they get after Wentz pretty good in this game.
Cardinals -6.5 at home against the 49ers. I'll take the 49ers. I think Brian Hoyer, first pass of the game, obviously a disaster, ended up really kind of costing them the game. But they let him throw the ball down the field a little bit and take some shots. Kyle Shanahan did. Maybe they get that offense started up. Carlos Hyde has been pretty good in the backfield. I think they'll turn this whole franchise around with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and do it pretty quickly. Arizona probably wins the game, but I'll take the 6.5.
Yeah, this is a tough one. If we see the Cardinals offense that we saw in the first quarter and a half or whatever against the Cowboys, it's one thing. But those tackles are a bit of a concern there in Arizona, and Palmer started to get crushed. I think the Cardinals do enough. I think they win this by a touchdown, so I'll lay that 6.5.
Oakland and Denver. Denver -3 at home. These two teams looked unbelievable in week 2. With Oakland rolling the Jets and Denver rolling Dallas, and then they both went on the road last week and looked terrible. Denver losing to the Bills, and they got that bit of a ticky-tack Von Miller personal foul unsportsmanlike conduct call. The Raiders got smoked on Monday night or Sunday night, whatever it was, by the Skins. I'm not as big a believer in the Raiders as most people. I still don't buy their defense, even though they have Khalil Mack. Trevor Siemian, things were great, and then all of a sudden he had a bad game. But I'll take Denver at home in this one, minus three.
Yeah, boy, the Raiders really need to win this game, I think. It's going to be a tough one on the road there. Carr, I think they finally start get things clicking there offensively a little bit more and play a little bit better defense as well, too. So I'll go against the grain once again with you. I'll take the Raiders plus three.
A brutal Sunday night game with the Seahawks hosting the Colts minus 13, although the Colts did maybe salvage something last week, putting up 41 points or so at home and beating the Browns. Jacoby Brissett gives them a chance against the Seattle team that hasn't been able to score at all. But I think they did score some points against Tennessee. I think this will right all the wrongs, the ills. I mean, I could see this one being 41-10 Seattle. So 13's not in the realm. I'm laying it.
I think it's too much once again here, especially with the problems that that the Seahawks have on that offensive line there. The Seahawks obviously the more talented team. I like what Brissett was able to do in that game. I just think that's too many points. So I'll take the Colts plus almost two touchdowns there.
Okay, I'll let you lead us off here in Kansas City, Washington, two really interesting teams. Washington got it together big time against Oakland. You can see why people think Kirk Cousins, some people think Kirk Cousins might be a franchise $20-plus million quarterback. You play like that, you're going to be MVP of the league if you do that every week. The Chiefs have been the best team in football. Chiefs minus seven.
Boy, this is the thing. You got to shut that running back down. I mean, if Alex Smith becomes a exponentially better quarterback when he has a running game, for sure. The Redskins, we see Kirk Cousins be able to do some of the things we know that he's been able to do in the past there. They got a nice some backs back there. They obviously got a decent secondary. This is going to be a good game to watch, for sure. I think the Chiefs win this, but I think the Redskins make it close. So give me Redskins plus the 7 points.
Okay, it takes us to Pittsburgh and Baltimore. The Steelers.
What did you pick? Did you pick?
Oh, sorry. I'll take the Chiefs. They're, until somebody slows this team up, Tariq Hill and Kareem Hunt. What they, the play calling of Andy Reid. Andy Reid's an offensive genius, man. The way he's using these guys with Kelce, the three of them. Tons of weapons and gives Alex Smith all the freedom in the world. So until somebody slows this thing down, I got the Chiefs.
All right.
Okay. Steelers minus three against the Ravens, Dave. I'll take the Steelers. Sooner or later, maybe just by accident, the offense is going to play well. So I still like this team. I'm not going to, based on one week, I'm not going to change my overarching view, just like, the Patriots lose to the Chiefs at home in week one and not going to change how I view the Patriots. I think the Steelers win this game. We get told all the stats about how it's always close, blah, blah, blah. Give me the Steelers 27-17.
boy, they have not been. Here's the thing, the battle of the Joes, Joe Flacco versus Joe Hayden. Joe Hayden is Joe Flacco's kryptonite, if you will. Five career interceptions Hayden has in games against Flacco. He picked him off three times last year. Joe Hayden leads all NFL players in interception of Joe Flacco passes. He's going to get one Sunday in Baltimore. Now, the thing is, the Steelers just have not played well in Baltimore. Ben Roethlisberger has not played it good in Baltimore during his career. It's got to be a lot of small ball. You can't turn the football over. I think there's going to be some sort of special teams play in this game. David, you know how you and I are always circling five plays, it seems like, every week. There's going to be something in special teams-wise that helps the Steelers in this game in here that I think probably even leads to a touchdown. Not a lot of points
in this game. Steelers, Ravens, you wouldn't think as much. Ravens offense is struggling. The defense Ravens have should be able to keep them around. I'm going to go real small. I'm not hitting that 30 mark for the Steelers until they finally break it. I'm not going to predict them to score 30 points in the game. I have the Steelers winning this on the road, just barely covering, 20-16.
All right. We've obviously gone, the podcasts are running well over an hour these days, so we'll save any thoughts. Just a couple, one larger note. We've gotten a ton of fantastic emails over the past week. Thank you so much for those. If we can make one small request, if you can go to iTunes and review the podcast, it just hasn't been reviewed much lately. Look, if you don't like the podcast, go review it and say you don't like it. Not telling you what to say. Tell us the faults. Tell us the positives. But if you wouldn't mind doing that, if it's it's on iTunes under podcast. It's not the easiest thing to find sometimes. So if you just Google Steelers podcast iTunes, it'll take you to a page in your browser, and then you should be able to get to it in iTunes. We would much appreciate that. But just a ton, I've tried to answer just about everything. We've gotten some negative, one or two negative emails, and I will respond to those. Those are appreciated as well. As long as they're courteous, we're happy to hear them. We had one or two over the past week that were not courteous, and hopefully we can keep the discourse at a civil level. So that's just thoughts on that. And we'll touch on that as events warrant going forward.
And you can follow me on my humor and civil level on on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show. Hey, Math Geeks, send me some info there. The Terrible Podcast at Steelers or The Terrible Podcast at gmail.com. If you like the show, you want to donate to the cause.
Ring the register.
Please go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button, upper right navigational bar. David, I'm ready to talk about I'm ready to get some of these negatives about the season's already over behind it. I want us to be talking about a win on Monday, and it really wouldn't hurt my feelings if it's a big win at that on the Monday show against the Ravens there. So yep, have a good weekend.
Thank you. And I won't be on Twitter for the game Sunday, but I'll be with you afterward. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.